Hi, this is Kalyan Karmakar, and welcome to a new episode of Foodocracy for Her and a new episode of Eating Books. So Foodocracy for Her, you probably know, is where I speak to women who are doing fabulous work in the world of food, and which is why we've got Deepa Rajpal over here. But Eating Books is something which I got, I sort of got the idea of starting after my last podcast interview, which is with Abhijit Banerjee, the Nobel Prize winner who just written a cookbook. And then I thought that, you know, there's so many people who are writing interesting books around food. And it's nice to sort of talk to them and get the author's mindset. And maybe then not limited only to women. So this is Eating Books as well. I hadn't thought of the name last time around, but now I have. And Deepa, this is absolute torture because I'm having like a coffee and espresso decaf, you know, after lunch. And I'm holding this book, you know. So I mean this is absolute torture. So so this is oh my god, cookies and brownies and strawberries and oh god, this is absolute torture. I don't know if I should stop the interview at this point. But welcome on board, Deepa. So glad to talk to you. We've met a couple of times, but so welcome on board.
Thank you so much for having me over. This is great fun. No. I'm happy to torture you. But I remember the story that you put out and you asked people to come and bake for you out of the book and buy the book and bake for you. So you have a way around, I think.
Yes. I am a bit greedy that way, like we say, angla. So Deepa and I sort of follow a similar trajectory in a sense that we both started our blogs in 2007. Deepa is a Delhi girl who's, you know, lived all over because dad was in the Air Force, but then back in Delhi by the time she was there to complete her education and everything. And now Gurgaon, right?
That's right, yeah, Gurgaon.
Yes, which is Delhi NCR, but to outsiders, it's Delhi. And Deepa is a professional photographer. All right. Anything I'm getting wrong? No.
I'm very amateur. I don't understand the camera, but I enjoy photography. So whatever I shoot from the heart, but I do not understand the camera.
Okay, because I was just going to the first line of her intro at the back, which said food stylist and photographer. We've seen your photographs.
Not professional at all.
Yeah. Okay. And Deepa was a home baker, so that's how she started. And here is very important to sort of understand that home baker and home chef, now the terms mean that people who are baking or cooking from home for retail. So I was just checking that with Deepa. She at one point did bake for retail, but now she bakes primarily for husband, kids, and if you're lucky enough to be her, you know, friends and relatives living close by. So she's that. She started, and this were the commonalities there. She started her blog in 2007, which is the same name as a book, Passionate About Baking, and made a mark right from the beginning. And I would say that, I mean, I've rarely seen an article on the top bloggers of India where Deepa is not featured. Having said that, I must say that today, hardly anyone writes about the top bloggers of India. They write about the Instagrammers, influencers, and all of that. So I don't know if, I don't feature there. I don't know if Deepa does.
Probably not there anymore.
you're very much there. I mean, it's just that it's different ways. And
The world has changed completely from when we started to now.
Yeah, but like blue jeans, which is an analogy which I normally give, but I would rather say like a chocolate cake, it's sort of evergreen. I mean, you know, some things never go out of fashion, do they? I mean, there will be, you know, croutons, whatever, the funny stuff coming in. But finally, it all comes down to this. The latest innovation I saw was cup pizza, like pizza shaped like a cup. Okay, enough of me. So now, Deepa, tell me. So tell me, because there are two tracks to you, which is interesting, photography and baking, and both are, I believe, self-taught. So how did the interest in baking happen? Is it because you were an Air Force kid?
I think so. I'm not sure where the interest came from, but there was always an oven at home. You know, the old rack-hold ovens, which had, I don't know, the armed forces always had it with the glass on top and you could peep in and there were insulation beads around and stuff. Very fascinating.
So from top you could, so from the top?
Yes.
Oh, not like this. Yeah,
they were round ovens. really nice. And that insulation beads around, and if they broke, we could fix it ourselves and stuff like that. So we started baking actually in the summer holidays, where life was really hot in Delhi and extremely boring as well, nothing to do. No internet, obviously, barely a telephone, television was unheard of at the time. So, a couple of baking books and relatives who would keep coming from overseas. So the ideas came in and just bake. I can't even imagine, but I was baking profit rolls during the summer holidays then.
So were you in college, school, or which phase
school.
Was this?
School.
School, okay.
College didn't give me time to do anything. I was just too bored.
What did you study in college?
College wasn't my kind of thing that I enjoyed. I was far too bored to do all of this, and I didn't know what to do.
What I'm saying is, what was your subject in college? What did you graduate in? Economics, okay. You had to think
economics.
A lot, huh?
Went over the top of my head.
my plus two was like that.
Science. Now makes sense. Yeah, God, it was horrible. The only macro that now makes sense to me is a macro lens on a camera. I have to come clean.
I love that. But my previous interview was with an economist who's now written a cookbook. So I said that we food people will write on economics now.
My guest, okay? Count me out.
Happily. So back in school, it must have been a bit different to source, right? Like, if for example, in Calcutta, when I was growing up, it was only perhaps in Newmarket, few places where you'd get things like cooking chocolates and all that. So what was the place in Delhi for that? Was it Connaught Place or, where would you buy
yourself? Nothing. Frugality was the name of the game. We never got anything. We baked with whatever there was at home. So I think it was just flour, butter, eggs, and cocoa powder. That's it. And I think in those days there was dalda, not even butter as such.
Butter was used to be rationed.
Yeah, everything was Russian. I still remember the recipes that say so much dalda. And now I think back and think, okay, wow.
And we survived.
Of course, and we will survive. Of course we will.
And so was the cocoa, that Cadbury cocoa, which would come in the tin?
Yes, the purple tins then. Now they've got plastic.
Yes. In fact, I was speaking to someone in Mondelez the other day, and I said that, when we were growing up, we'd eat Enid Blyton and about hot chocolate and then buy those cocoa. Stuff like that.
Chocolate.
But this is interesting, since you said you were an economic student, I don't know if you'd come across this or you knew or know it, but Abhijit Banerjee was saying me that the word economics apparently comes from oconomics. I mean, it's there in his book, which apparently means making do with what you have. And then he said his recipes are not that because he leads a life today where it's possible to have access to everything. So in a way, before you did economics, your baking was all about economics.
And it still is.
Yeah, maybe
I
didn't
love
realize
what you
that.
Said about it. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm still on economics because I still bake with what I have, mostly. Of course, we're blessed now to have so much stuff at Amazon, a button away. But most of my recipes...
You have an Amazon list also, right? You have an Amazon
I
list?
I do have, storefront of sorts. Again,
but lockdown must have been tough. Lockdown must have been tough, getting stuff. The lockdown must have been a bit tough, right? Because getting imported stuff.
Of course. But I used what I had. I always used what I had. So if you see my recipes, you will find a lot of flour, if it's maida or whether then I got onto whole grains, and whole grains went atta, or if it was the puja season or the Navratri, then we would get kutuka atta or buckwheat flour. So stuff like that. I just kept changing my recipes with whatever I found. And the thing is, if you're not baking commercially, you're baking for yourself or around, then you have the luxury to experiment. And if something, of course, often something fails, then you can always upcycle.
No, but that's true because, I really don't have a baking bone in me. Years back, I did a course at Pooja's, Pooja Tingra's thing, and I made brownies for my own birthday, actually, a brownie cake.
Wow.
So, I didn't do so. And I made cookies for my wife. And since then, her complaint is that since then, I've never made it again. I use my oven for the roasts and stuff. No, but the point of making it that... But I get her good stuff. I get her good stuff. But it's the same
Anybody
thing about
can get
cooking.
Good stuff, Kalyan.
She loves this series and she never misses my Foodocracy for her chat. So please, don't instigate her. But what you said resonated with something which I've seen while cooking, because when you're cooking yourself, then you're very conscious about what's going in, unlike when you're eating out. And often you can extract a lot of flavor, and I'm sure making like that, with very small portions of like ghee, butter, even say meats or stuff like that. You don't need the sort of largest which commercial thing. So is that, was that the thought behind your starting your blog? I mean, why did you start your blog? It was at that time, 2007, was very new.
Yeah, it was just that I had a lot of time on hand and my husband was traveling and he got me a digital camera. So, yes. And of course, we had just got the internet a year ago. So, when everything is free and then you think, okay, you don't have to take a roll of film to get it developed.
Yes.
And there's something as easy as plugging a cable and you see your pictures instantly. It's like gratification. So that's how a blog started. I think because of the net, and I discovered a couple of blogs in the US and they really had me smitten. There were pastry chefs at the time in the US and they would take really nice pictures. So I thought instead of writing in my scraggly little notebook forever and sitting all shrouded, it was just something very exciting to do. So I started a blog only for myself to kind of break my own monotony and add some happiness to my life with pictures. And then very gradually, a couple of people started noticing that there was something called me there as well, which was like, I really hit bold out of the blue. When somebody left...
Was it Blogspot? Was your thing a Blogspot?
Yes, yeah, definitely. And then I migrated to WordPress after that and then bought a domain. And everything I did was because somebody said, I was on Twitter at the time, that why don't you get yourself domain and this, then that, and the other. I think it was Purple Foodie, Shaheen from Bombay.
She said to me,
get your own domain. And so that's how I did it. And there was a lovely community on Twitter at the time.
Exactly. In fact, that's something which I so miss, both Twitter as well as in blogs, because, people would comment on each other's blogs and Twitter. And I know Shaheen from back then. And like you said, there were so many people who were willing to help people out and each other out. I can't recognize Twitter today. Instagram's perhaps a bit like what Twitter was, perhaps a bit, but when did your interest in photography start? Sorry,
everything seems to take a lot more effort now. Earlier with Twitter, it was very, it was like an everyday flowing process. You didn't have to think, you didn't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Everybody was there.
Yeah. Like the I saw some pictures from a person really high up in our political thing without masks in surroundings in India and abroad, and then I actually thought of tweeting and with no malice that what's the take on masks? Then do we not need to wear it? Because then I'm happy not to wear it. But then I thought that I don't think in today's environment one can refer to a political person or at least a certain party and say anything innocent.
What I meant. You have to think before you speak now. Earlier nobody felt bad. May I have coffee?
And how did your interest in... Yes, please go ahead. Is coffee easily accessible? Do you want me to pause
a
bit?
You have to send it to someone.
Okay, so we'll do an exchange. I'm sending you an espresso and let me see what can you send me. Chia seed, panna cotta, eggless. Whenever I see eggless, I feel like telling people, okay, you should charge me less because you're not giving on that. I'll have this with the coffee. Huh? This is the moussa cotta.
I love it.
The panna cotta and a mousse.
And you know where that came from? That was a panna cotta recipe that failed. And it turned out like a mousse, so I made it into a moussa cotta. That was a really nice
food. I was reading recently that apparently the tiramisu was something which came out of a failure in the kitchen, the original tiramisu.
The Eton mess as well came out the same way, but
even some of the Bengali sweets like the mishti dohi and also the garbar ice cream. I don't know if you've come across that in Mangalore. Okay, so it's like a fabulous thing in Mangalore. It was actually invented in a place called Dayana at Udipi, but now it's really popular in Mangalore, okay. And there's one place which does it very well. So it's a sort of a sundae, and they put in scoops of ice cream and nuts and this, that, and it's like... So apparently the story goes that in the original Dayana, once one customer came in and said that he needed something for his daughter, like an ice cream or something like that. And so the waiter went and told the cook inside, and the cook saw whatever was around and threw it together and this thing. And he loved it. And since then, and it's garbar because, you know, they couldn't make whatever was the original thing. Now, a lot of this is, of course, hearsay, but, you know, no, but it's a nice story and a great ice cream.
Nevertheless, interesting, and a great ice cream.
Very, very addictive. Now, tell me about your photography. How did you know? Because again, we come from a generation where, like, so my dad passed away, so I inherited his Pentax and Yashica, and my initial photography would be like, you look at aperture, this, that stuff. How many of your 36 are left? Rolls,
not same. Yes.
You know? So how did your thing start?
See, I used to take pictures with, Pentax only, I think. But that was before I started baking or blogging. Once I got the digital camera, there was nothing to stop me, right? I wasn't wasting anything, and the same card could be...
Yeah, earlier we would never take food pictures with the roll.
We would take food pictures with 36 exposures.
Reel
was very precious at that time.
Yes.
So I think it was just because of the digital thing. And... again, at the time that we started blogging, there was a huge community that had competitiveness, I don't know if you call that, or would come together to take better food pictures.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, even there would be these story things, like, you know, story of the month, and, you know, there would be a lot of these initiatives.
Yeah, there was something that they did, does your blog look better with this? And they would pick... I think it's DGLMGIT, something of the sort. And then they would pick people and say, so-and-so has made it for the month. So there was always that desire to get better.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a limited community of sorts. And I see a lot of it now as well. But everything is so overcrowded. It gets, it takes the joy away.
I wanted to ask you about that because, this is something which I feel, and I've been sort of, contemplating a lot about that, you know, a lot of us, when we came into blogging, you, Priya Mitra Agarwal, Rushina, even Shaheen, whom you spoke of, though she was much younger than us, we came into it, like you said, because of boredom, and we wanted some sort of creative outlet, which was different from our daily life, and we did it, and with no purpose. Commercial purpose or whatever. Then
no,
some of us, like,
no purpose,
I mean,
makes sense too.
Yeah. And then some of us, like, both of us took certain commercial paths from that, which is fine. But I'm saying that today, almost everyone who enters social media, and I guess it's more Instagram than blogging, are there because they want to achieve something. And they say, how quickly we can achieve this. And, you know, there's so much of things out, like reels and this and that. And like you said, I mean, it sometimes is a bit overwhelming because, like, I mean, I've been blogging for 14 years. So I was 14 years younger when I started. I mean, I don't have those energy levels. And also, since writing is what I do all the time now versus it being an escape from market research, I don't want to be out there so often. In fact, during Diwali, for the first time, I took a break. I told myself, you will not click a picture of what you've eaten. You will not. And for 4 days, I took a picture, only one food picture, and that also I didn't post it. But how do you deal with this? And what's your word of advice to people?
Can you imagine the pressure and the no joy in what you do? For me, I still have a lot of joy in what I do. I really enjoy everything, but I'm also quite fortunate to have a really nice community with now Instagram being the best or the most used platform. There's a really nice community there. And I know that they enjoy what I do. They're always grateful. They're always talking to me, lots of DMs. And I try to engage a lot. I try and answer every single DM that I get. And but for me, it's not the race to prove. It's just that I wake up every morning with an idea that I want to create. So you'll see small cakes, 5-inch, 2-inch, 3-inch. I don't do very big ones.
Two inch cakes.
Big ones, like a pastry, little patisserie cakes, but also because it's visual for me.
Yes.
So there are certain times that I feel the push more to create when there's maybe summer comes and the mango season starts, where you think, all right, there's color. Now with strawberries that have started, or I discover, I'm like this, if I discover a new ingredient, I get a little obsessive about it. So
Give an example of something.
Blue tea. I discovered
blue tea
last month. Blue tea, matcha, they call it. It's actually, it's a butterfly pea powder, which is known as blue matcha for whatever. And I had a flower pot that was growing the same flower, and somebody posted something about it. And then somebody said, this is blue. I think I found it on Amazon and I bought it. So that's been really festering on me. And then I mixed it into cream one day and I got this beautiful blue. So if you go to my feed now, you'll see matcha, blue matcha, blue matcha. So I'm a little obsessive about these things.
Like a smurf.
It's really silly, but...
It would be like a smurf.
God, I haven't heard of the smurfs in years. Yes, the blue smurf. I was obsessive about quinoa at one time when they started growing
it. So there's your...
Don't even ask me. I'm like this.
This is your latest...
I'm going to get off it.
And the blue is coming on it.
They're in the previous reel. It's there in the one before that. Yes, and there's one more with truffles.
Yes,
there you go.
You know, you could have been an ad for Chell Park or Surekha. You remember those brands from our growing up days? Chell Park, Surekha. But who uses fountain pens? So that's the...
Yeah, another problem. Who uses fountain pens? So sad. So, yeah, that's how I create content now.
But you've always been focused on or should I say passionate about baking. So was there a conscious choice? Like, is it that you don't cook? Is it that you don't make savory bakes? Is it that you don't make mithai? I mean, why did you sort of stick to baking?
I'm not sure. I enjoyed baking. I didn't cook at the time. I started cooking only after I got married because the husband had to be fed. But and I have books and books of recipes written down from every poor person that crossed my path, every aunt, every relative. I mean, I used to just kill them for their recipes. And they're really nice recipes. So I cook a really mean korma. Biryani is not the best, but I still make one. And people eat it. I make kebabs. I make sambar. And idli was for lunch today. I make a lot of pasta. I make everything. I make khausway.
That's a lot. Grilled chicken.
I do everything. I mean, you should be ashamed of yourself if you haven't graduated from brownies and cookies. it gives you direction. I hope Kenaz is listening to me.
You're saying you do all that.
Baking does have a couple of kormas and stuff. I just got a lot more focused later on desserts because I found it's better to have a niche once Instagram came about, actually. So I stuck to that niche. And now with the pandemic, I found that everybody said eggless.
Yes.
And I tried, I have to be honest, it got to me and I tried to push it away for the longest time because I thought you cannot bake eggless. And I'm not
But why pandemic and eggless? I mean, people who are eggless, like the Jains, Marwaris and all that would always be that. What's the connection?
I think during the pandemic, people had fewer things at home and they couldn't go out to shop that much. So eggless was, for me, it became a really nice... like a motivation to try something new. And once I started, I loved it because I don't like the taste of the egginess that comes in my dessert.
Okay, I'm just going to take a little interruption. Like I said, we are, both my boys have been, I don't know how to sort of, are following us. So can you see? Can you see him, Baby Loaf?
Yes.
Okay, there's Baby Loaf and there's Nimchi. So can I just open the door to let Loaf in? I'm sort of working out of a makeshift thing, but I'm coming back.
Hurry, take your time. Don't worry at all.
No. But they get a bit, this thing, if they don't have access to us. So, yes. You were telling me about... You have a dog, right?
Two.
Wow.
And of course, in
Gurgaon and Delhi, you can have an outside. We don't have that option in Bombay.
We are very fortunate to have an outside. But the little dog is autistic. So she keeps us most of the night. But she's very sweet.
Okay, I'm just going to pause this for a second because my breed has... Okay, I'm back. You got a sort of view of both boys. And you can still get them. I mean, they're happy because this room has just been restored because there's a lot of... So this is my study. And you can see the two of them in the corner. And right from the beginning, they have... whenever they see me sitting there, they are there. And I must tell you this story because... I have always been a dog lover. Except maybe the time when I first came to India. When I first came to India as a kid and my dad was... My grandpa was in... Pandar Road, and I was maybe 3 or 4 years. So for some reason, a dog sort of chased me and bit me. But since then, I love dogs, and I've disliked cats. I've disliked cats, and in fact, there was some 3-4 years back, and I was going through a very low phase in my life, and uncle of ours had actually suggested to Kainaz that keep a puppy, and he'll be much better, and we didn't take it because at that time both of us went out to work, and we felt that. We were not ready to commit. And then Baby Love came into my life and then he made me a cat lover. And then came in Nimki, who's a lockdown baby. And now they call me a cat whisperer. So like I have some friends who feed cats outside. So when we are all together, the cats will eat from them and then they come to me and nuzzle. So
how sweet is that? Amazing.
Okay, now, it truly is. Okay, now coming back from cats to eggs. So you're saying pandemic egglet. In fact, for us, it was the reverse. I mean, being a Bengali and a Parsi household, we made sure if nothing else is there, at least eggs are there. But it's interesting. I mean, you never know things. But yeah, so it's more because of the pandemic and lack of stocking, you said that people are
That people were asking, but the whisper was always there. And the time and when I shifted over to complete eggless baking, they were the happiest. And it made me happy as well because it gave me motivation and it made me experiment. And I would keep thinking, how do I make this eggless? And then got me more ideas. I started, for instance, a cavity cake, which came to my mind one day and I just cut out a bit and filled it with something. So that became a nice...
A cavity cake. So instead of a cake giving a cavity, the cake has a cavity. So this is like a... Revenge of humankind on the teeth. But I like this. This is like the revenge of mankind on sugar.
The revenge of yeah, so it's interesting. So I cut a cavity out of a cake. I make a cake and I cut a cavity out of it. And then I fill that cavity with something. So it's like an instrument, but it's an easier way of doing it. So you have the cream inside rather than the cake inside. And so I did a lot of it during the holidays. I did a Shrikhand, a mango Shrikhand and stuff. And people really enjoyed it and recreated it. And that just keeps me thinking more and more. A mango Treshlesh, a Falsa Treshlesh, all of this.
So how did that make you feel? Because, we are at that time, especially we were in a lockdown situation, a new pandemic, not like malaria or plague or whatever. This is not something anyone knew anything about. And, everyone's life changed, whatever be the circumstances. And I'm sure yours and your families did as well. Am I hearing that this eggless demand sort of gave you a sort of fresh purpose? Or am I just putting words in your mouth?
Definitely. Just gave me something new to do and something different to do every day. And I was okay, the dogs were really happy that everything was shut and there was somebody at home all the time. Though there's always somebody at home, but for them, I have to be around because I'm their feeder.
It's like that for Nimki, our younger one. I mean, it's Kenaz and me. He's been here all his life.
So the little ones, Bambi and Coco, always want me around. They won't even get out of bed unless I get out of bed. They're that bad. Everybody can open all the doors, but the minute I get out of bed, they get up and come running. So for me, it was okay. I've become more reclusive, and I have no complaints. Mm. I'm a happy reclusive. It gives me more time to shoot pictures. It gives me more time to do stuff at home. For me, it's the same.
So, you know, there are a lot of people, and there's nothing wrong with that, who sort of like to network and, you know, go attend events and stuff like that. And they were really missing that. And now that things are opening, they're going for that. But at least for someone like me, who's, I don't know whether recluse or not, I actually don't mind. I'm happily using this excuse as for not going to events and parties and stuff like that. But you don't feel that, and I'm now asking you these questions for people who also watch, because, you know, I mean, you're a role model to so many of us, that is it that you cannot be out there and still sort of carve yourself a successful career in the world of food? Any thoughts? Because you've seen yourself, you've seen others who are different from you. So what is your thinking? Because some people like to just cook or bake, and I mean, they don't need to go, they don't want to go out there, but they feel the pressure that you know, I have to be seen, I have to be this thing. So any advice from you on that?
Yeah, actually it depends on what you want to do and what you rate as success. For me, you wouldn't find me putting my face on my on any social media platform. You won't see me very often.
Yeah.
Even at the time you see me, I'm a little reclusive.
No, we see you only in the articles.
Oh, get out of here, Karmakar. That's all nonsense. I'm a very, I come onto the screen very hesitatingly because I'm happier behind the camera. So for me, my outreach to the world is through what I do. And that connect is always there. There is enough. So when I'm on social media or Instagram, for example, whenever I post something or share something, for me, it's very important that the audience has a takeaway, a positive takeaway of some sort or the other. Wow. So I think if
that... Can you give me an example? Can you give me anything which comes to your mind of any post? I mean, we don't necessarily have to see it. If it's close by, I can see it also.
No, any post, for example, I'm talking about something in general. If I share,
okay, I'll take this. This is your third last post.
Okay, the strawberry.
Do you want to say something about this? Positive takeout.
The reel is on this handle, which is passionate about baking. The recipe is on my other handle, which is PAB recipes. So what I did was, people were asking for recipes constantly, and this, my main handle, passionate about baking, has a mix of pictures, recipes, on and off. So everything was getting very lost. So then I decided to start a dedicated handle, just as an experiment, called PAB Recipes, where I would only share recipes. So that's interestingly got an audience and people were happy. So what I do now is every time I post something here, the recipe has to go onto that handle.
Okay. I didn't know about
it. It's almost like a digital cookbook of some sort. So it's got all the recipes there.
Wow. And you're just giving it out there. It's not that you've thought of like making an app and getting people to pay for it.
I'm a little lazy.
But you do work with brands, right? I mean, sometimes we've had discussions on social media about like if a brand wants work done, it shouldn't be for free or for free butter or something like that. Do you have a point of view on that?
No, definitely. I work with brands. I work with a lot of good brands. And for me, again, it's very important. I will not unwrap a bar of chocolate and eat into it for my audience to see me doing that and advertise a new bar of chocolate.
Unless you actually like it. You've tried something and like it.
No, even if I like it, you tell me, if I'm eating a chocolate or you're drinking that cup of coffee, for instance, in front of me, what is my takeaway? I either want it or I'll have to go and get up and see.
Yeah.
There is no takeaway. So if you tell me how you've made that cup of coffee, at least there is something for me in that. So if I'm working with a brand and I'm using even a Cadbury Silk Mousse bar, for instance,
yeah,
I'll make a dessert using that. And I will use that to garnish, to decorate it as well. But there will be something more, something that the audience will take away with. And it has to be a positive takeaway. So I'm not going to stand picturing a hamper or pouring myself a drink and make my money. That's just not me.
So it's more like, say, for example, that mousse, if you're showing a new way of decorating something with that and then using the mousse chocolate. Yeah.
I use the mousse in the recipe as well.
Okay. So
it's part of the tart and it's part of the decoration.
Yes. Now, this is where you and I are different. I mean, not this part, but I belong to what one can call the storyteller or diarist sort of school of this thing. In fact, there's so many times when I put up pictures or recipes or something, sorry, what something I've eaten, and people ask me recipe, please. And I tell them that, look, I'm not a recipe person. And if someone has sent me this or I've had this somewhere else, how can I give you the recipe? You, on the other hand, are very, you know, out and out recipe person. And, you know, people are looking at baking and it's something which is, you know, exploded and they get functional stuff here. I'm just wondering, and I don't know if I'm inferring too much into it, and I'd love to hear your point. But you said that after you got married, you know, recipe books and recipes given to you by people were really your savior as you started cooking. Is that when your love or reverence for recipes started, or have you ever thought of it, or have you always been a recipe person?
Actually, haven't thought of it, but that was my survival. There was no other way for me to get into a kitchen because I was clueless. I had never cooked. I used to work with British Airways before for about 8 years. And then I got married and it was straight from there into this. So I was clueless. So that was my survival. But now when I look at desserts, I just find that I can't stick to a recipe. I have 100 cookbooks. And unfortunately, every time I open it, my mind goes and finds its own some stupid change and I completely turn it around. But when I share my recipes, I find that a lot of people who are like me when I was younger.
Yeah.
And they want that recipe.
We are all still young. We are all still young. Maybe when you started cooking.
So maybe that's a resource for them now. Nobody in my family had baking recipes. So I had to stumble around and find my own way. So maybe they're like that now and they find, here's a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think visuals help a lot. If you take better food pictures, if you style them a little bit, and they're nice. See, you're a storyteller. People come to you for stories and they're nice stories. They've got a flow to it. Your narrative is really nice.
Yeah.
And it's warm and it kind of draws everybody into your own life and your experiences. So that is what your audience comes to you for.
Yeah, mine, it's like different counters in a buffet. It's like different counters in a buffet.
Absolutely.
And your photography, because you started in 2007, but right from then, like, it's been pretty path-breaking. I mean, your photography is like been pretty new age, because at that time there were either people just photographing their cakes at home, or they were the professional photographers. But you know, their stuff was very advertising world sort of thing, but your photography sort of preempted what became the Instagram model of photography.
Yeah, it's quite strange that you say that, but my inspiration again came from the blogs in the US that I saw, and they were
chefs
who would really take nice pictures. Nobody would do it here.
Yeah. Like my inspiration from writing came from the blogs abroad. My inspiration from writing came from, you know, Anthony Bourdain.
There was a structure to it. The riffraff wasn't there. You said enough that would make sense to somebody. So this way I would show enough that would make sense to somebody. And for me, that was very important. There's always clutter. So it just got better and better. I also discovered Pinterest at that time. So between Twitter and Pinterest, there was enough.
Pinterest is that old, is it? Pinterest is that old.
I think same as old as Twitter. Possibly.
Okay, I've always been on Pinterest, but it's not been active medium for me. I mean, it's always been very visual.
Everything is very visual.
Yeah. But I was also thinking that, I mean, you're so inventive. Like, I don't know how many recipes are just in this book. But I mean, do you have a count of that? Is it like 100 plus recipes in the book? Maybe.
Yeah,
that's why, because every alternate page are also pictures and stuff. 120 odd recipes, and you're your blog and Instagram page has so many. So how do you keep like do you at any point think of going to baking school, because there are people who've done that, who've gone to corporate law or whatnot for serious courses, or do you look at online things to learn? How do you keep reinventing yourself? How do you keep doing new things?
It's just a mind. It's just a creative mind. Thoughts keep coming to my head, and I've got everybody at home who's very supportive. So they will eat every nonsense that I create. And if they don't, then my parents are always there. So, you need an audience. First, there was a blog that had to be fed. Now it's Instagram that needs to be fed. So it's just, I think, wherever your abilities or your interests lie, if your aptitude is such, then I think you find your balance. I find a lot of people don't want to think out of the box. They don't want to think that they can do it. I often get questions which I'm glad to answer. If I do something with a brown sugar, the question will be, I don't have brown sugar, can I use white sugar? If I use ghee in a cake, the question will be, is it okay if I use ghee, butter instead of ghee? And these thoughts keep coming to my mind. So often I say yes or no or whatever. But I also tell them the best way to learn is to experiment. Exactly. You've got to step out of your zone. You've got to think differently. Make a few stupid changes and you learn.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's too much of hand-holding, which is expected, right? I mean,
too much. It's our education system. They have in fact, only, or maybe we shouldn't speak down this road.
No, you should. And I'll tell you why. Because in case anyone, I mean, hardly anyone sees my YouTube channel or whatever. But if anyone's seen the interview with Avid Banerjee, and Avid said the same thing, that he came up with this cookbook as a, in a sense, a protest against TV recipe shows, which are perfect. So therefore, he's given, measures like, one finger of ginger or whatever. And Cheyenne, who's done the illustrations, they have not put any food photos. She just put geometrical designs for each dish. And saying that basically, I mean, no, that's the point of view, whether you want to give pictures or not. But the point of view, like, it's like you're saying that after a while, take your own path. So I asked him the same thing, that is it like a conscious or unconscious protest against, learning by rote? In Bengali, we used to call it mukhasto bidya. And for me, it was a bit difficult because, I'd come from a O-level background into ICSE. So from where I was in fourth standard, writing things like stories on a suspicious looking man. Then when Dad passed away and I moved to an ICSE school, it was like, 10 sentences on a cow. I don't know if today you're allowed to write
they
that.
Don't let
But I so love the, when you hear these different perspectives, that yes, I mean, why? I mean, you discover. I mean, that's what you've done. I mean, if you want to be a diva rajpal, you have to
Interestingly, you say that. So when I bake, I don't follow rules. So when I go to a few blogs,
this is breaking news, because the assumption with baking is, baking is very precise. This is why people like me just don't go there, because we are not organized people.
No problem at all. I put everything into a bowl now with eggless and I just whisk it all together and I don't think air, what is going to happen? And I shove it into the oven and it always gives me a cake. When Reels started and we thought 30 seconds, how do I show a cake? My banana bread, for instance. So in the cookbook, the recipe has a wet mix and a dry mix. For my Reels, I just put everything into a bowl and I stirred it together and I baked it. And so many people made it after that. And they all came back to say, this is the best one we've ever made. So for me, I find a lot of blogs still and baking blogs that tell you, this is why you do this. If you don't do this, then do this. And if this doesn't happen, and why you do this. And I keep thinking, we're going back to school constantly. Why can't we break that? everybody doesn't come here to learn why and how and if you use this ingredient and a spoon less. So I'm a bit of a rebel. I've always been. So for me, I'm here to break rules. I'll put everything into a bowl, stir it together, shove it into the oven, and it's okay. It still bakes.
I'm turning a bit red in the face because when I do share recipes, which is not too often, I like to give explanations behind everything, but maybe that's because I like to give GAN. I mean, you know, like I would like to be a professor. Like, so maybe
no, so that is what you are, like my husband, research analyst, needs to know everything, and I'm like, just get on with it.
As long as you don't say that this is mansplaining, I mean, that's not the
I'm
intention.
Not saying a word.
Okay, now you know, closing, let's see how much time we have. We've got a couple of few minutes. Tell us a bit about this book. Who's it aimed for at, and what can people expect to get out of this?
Okay, this book is aimed for anybody who wants to do something in chocolate. If you're caught off guard somewhere, really hungry, there is a recipe for everybody in this. 75% of the recipes are eggless or egg-free, which is interesting. The whole tarts chapter is eggless. But beyond the eggless factor, I use ingredients which are readily available. So you won't find me going down the gourmet path. I find things that are hopefully in everybody's kitchen. Obviously, if you want to do a special cake, there has to be a little more effort, maybe a few more ingredients. But what I like about it is you can take bits and bobs of recipes and mix them and make your own something completely different. Wow. So you don't get stuck to something. There are enough ideas for you to break the barriers. But there's enough for everybody in this, from the smallest little vegan chocolate truffle, which might use just chocolate and yogurt, for instance, or and blueberries. I think there was blueberry yogurt or granola or basics to bottles. We've got salted caramel. We've got peanut butter, anything that might help you. It's a beginning. It's not. It hasn't been a very easy process. I never realized what you commit to when you get into a cookbook. But yeah, there's something for everybody, and don't get intimidated. It's got very simple recipes. And I'm always a DM away, actually. I'm always there. Ask
you. Are. Is this a pandemic baby?
It is. Pre-pandemic was when I started it. It got delayed because of the pandemic. So you do have a lot of pandemic recipes and reference through it too.
Okay, then what I'm going to do as we end is that I'm going to go on record saying that I'm not going to be my usual lazy self. I'm actually going to go through this, because when you said that this is a book for anyone who wants to bake with chocolate, I'm married to the world's biggest chocolate lover, and given that we've just completed 20 years of marriage, I think maybe I can sort of break my fears and make something for her. If I do, I will tag you, and and if she likes it. If she doesn't, then I'll send you the DM. but thank you so much, Diva. It was such a pleasure. Talking to you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Not at all. Bye. Take care. Bye.